This morning's reading is Connections That Matter, and this is adapted from The Cellular Church by Malcolm Gladwell. Churches have at their core a contradiction. In order to attract newcomers, they must have low barriers to entry. They must be unintimidating, friendly, and compatible with the culture they are a part of. However, in order to retain their membership, they need to have an identity distinct from that culture. They need to give members a sense of belonging to a community with a distinct identity. But there's a dilemma. If I go to a church with 500 members and a magnificent cathedral with spectacular services and music, why should I volunteer? Why should I donate any substantial share of my resources? If the barriers to entry become too low, and if the ties among members become tenuous, then a church, as it grows bigger, may actually become weaker. One solution to the problem is simply not to grow. Historically, churches have sacrificed size for community. But there is another approach, namely to create a church out of a network of lots of little church cells, tightly knit groups, who meet in one another's homes during the week. In the post-war years, Alcoholics Anonymous perfected the small group technique. The small group did not have a designated leader who stood at the front. Instead, participants sat in a circle. The purpose was discussion and interaction, not one person teaching while others listened. The remarkable thing about these groups was their power. An alcoholic could lose his job, his family. He could be hospitalized. He could be warned by half a dozen doctors and go on drinking. But put him in a room with his peers once a week to share the burdens of others and to have his own burdens understood by others. In these conditions, he might do something that once seemed impossible. When churches in the 1970s began to adopt the cellular model, they found out the same thing. The small group was an extraordinary vehicle of commitment. It was personal and flexible. It cost nothing. Every congregant was able to find a small group that matched his or her interests. Today, at least 40 million Americans are in a religiously based small group. The growing ranks of small group membership have caused a profound shift in the nature of the American religious experience. Small groups are not organizations within the church. They are the church. The words of Malcolm Gladwell. Well, as Rich mentioned, the sermon this morning, actually the whole service was arranged by our interim minister, Reverend Dave Johnson. And the sermon in particular, these are his words, but I have to say that these words resonate with me, and Richard's nodding, and I believe in these words. Scene one. A group of 10 gathers at a UU church in Vermont for an evening of fun. They call themselves The Hungarian Rhapsody. No one in the group is a native Hungarian, but they share a common interest. They meet 3 times a year to celebrate our 500-year-long Unitarian history. One meeting per year is to deepen their appreciation of our Unitarian heritage in Eastern Europe. At a second meeting each year, they plan projects to strengthen their partnership with a small Unitarian church in Transylvania. They exchange letters, photographs, and gifts with those who have become their spiritual partners. They arrange Skype calls featuring music and celebrations. Although their languages, cultures, and forms of worship are quite different, the Hungarian Rhapsody values their partner church 5,000 miles away. At a third gathering each year, the Hungarian Rhapsody meets for fun. They bring gourmet dishes of Hungarian cuisine. They invite musicians who form selections by, can you guess, Franz Liszt. They sing a few hymns from our hymn book in the language of our partners overseas, such as hymn 114, Forward Through the Ages. They sing in Hungarian. There are 8 or 9 regular members of the Hungarian Rhapsody. A couple of new folks join each year. Now, if I was a member of that group, well, I'd want to start the Bohemian Rhapsody in honor of Queen. And I think I would, as far as Hungarian or Romanian, I believe I'm thinking of King John Sigismund, the Unitarian king, from around the year 1600, and Francis David, the spiritual leader of that community in what is now Romania. And their rallying cry, I believe, in Hungarian was Isten Egg, which means God is one. So that's my attempt to speak Hungarian or Romanian. Scene 2. Thursday lunchtime in a parlor of a Unitarian church in Nebraska. Remember, Dave wrote this, and he's from Kansas. This group calls themselves the Lifelong Loyalists. Their complete name is the Ulyssians, Lifelong Loyalty, Caregiving, and Support. Their adopted name is from Tennyson's poem, Ulysses. For they too have promised each other to strive, to seek, to find, and not to yield. The Ulyssians members range in age from 50 to 95. They share a common commitment to personal caregiving for one or more seniors, some of whom may be living in their own home. Others are in assisted living, and others are in a distant city, which group members visit. The Lifelong Loyalists have promised that they will meet together once a month, no matter what, because if they don't, they may lose perspective and may become discouraged. In recent years, a grassroots movement has spread through congregations of all denominations. It goes by a variety of names: affinity groups, connection circles, covenant groups, roots and branches groups. By whatever name, purpose, or organizational structure, such groups are the heartbeat of congregational life. Why? Because they offer multiple entry points. In so doing, they address the two primary needs of those who come through our front doors: a need for ultimacy and a need for intimacy. At present, 4 out of every 10 Americans belong to a small group that meets regularly and provides affirmation and support. These may be 12-step groups, youth groups, singles groups, sports and hobby groups, political or civic groups, educational groups, and covenant groups. Many participants have had their lives deeply enriched. Some have overcome life-threatening addictions or other deadening habits by having a shared purpose and focus. Others have come to appreciate a previously unfamiliar culture. Some seek to learn how to forgive and how to become more accepting of themselves. Most stay with these groups for extended periods. The small group movement is thoroughly American. It reflects and responds to two fundamental dilemmas of our culture: individualism and rootlessness. The small group movement is deeply populist. It attracts people who do not want top-down institutional solutions to life's challenges. Instead, participants commit to the difficult work of encouraging each other. It rejects the formal wisdom embodied in creeds and ideologies. These groups foster spiritual maturation, not by replicating techniques developed and sanctioned by a higher-level national or international umbrella organization. The small group movement is radically populist. To be sure, small groups will not be for everyone. Our life rhythms and priorities are evolving. We discover new sources of connection and renewal. We differ in how much support we already have in our attitudes about spirituality and in the amount of time we can allocate to new activities. Scene three. This group calls themselves the Banner Crafters. Our banner, by the way, I think is hanging out in the narthex. And the late Kit Fournier helped create that banner. So I'm thinking of her now with the Banner Crafters group. They will meet monthly for 7 months. Then they will celebrate a job well done and have a party. Then they will declare their work to be done. But for these 7 months, they come together because they are proud of their congregation's sanctuary with new speakers. The banner, maybe we need a new banner. We need a banner group. The banner that they design and create will represent the signature qualities of their beloved community. So they gather to brainstorm ideas and blend their crafting, aesthetic, and artistic skills. They will prepare a work of art that symbolizes what they value most. Their goal is to have a banner ready to unfurl at the congregation's upcoming 60th anniversary and to unfurl at SUSE, which is coming up in July. These previous scenarios are fictitious, yet in every congregation there are such examples of initiative, talent, and potential. My friends, our congregation is at a turning point. Our ministerial search committee will soon guide us through an important process of self-reflection. We will complete in-depth written surveys and gather for in-person interviews. 1 year from now, we will welcome our newly settled minister and chart new directions. But we need not wait until then to strengthen our covenant groups and other entry points into our life together. This is Reverend Dave's recommendation and his promise to us. Reverend Dave promises to work with us for his remaining year here on 4 intentional strategies to promote clarity and trust building in small groups. Without such clarity and trust, groups become vulnerable to disruptive functioning, which diverts the group from its agreed upon purpose. These are the 4 criteria that Reverend Dave will promote to strengthen every small group in our congregation. 1, develop a clear statement of your group's purpose. This is essential for prospective new members to understand what your group is about. What business are you in? 2, identify clear leadership roles in your group. You may wish to select one leader, or you may prefer shared leadership. For instance, you might choose one person as the energizer, and another as the communicator, another as the logistics person, another to arrange hospitality, another who will initiate outreach opportunities, and another who is attentive to the group process and inclusivity, and so forth. 3, develop a shared agreement or a covenant, spelling out how the group agrees to work together and to get along in healthy ways. Does your group have unclear expectations and vague boundaries where anything goes? If newcomers are to find your group trustworthy, they will want such clarity. Your covenant might specify agreements as far as how frequently and where you will meet. What are your agreements about attendance and confidentiality? Will you have an agenda or be open to unplanned topics? Will your group welcome new members or be closed for an agreed-upon interval? How will you resolve disagreement or conflict? Will you set a clear endpoint, thereby allowing some members to close out their involvement and move on? 4, finally, invite each group to develop an outward focus beyond itself. As the group matures, how might it inspire and energize the congregation as a whole? How might the group impact the larger community? These 4 criteria meet consideration by every covenant group, or these 4 criteria merit consideration by every covenant group or affinity group at WUU in order to become meaningful entry points into the life of our congregation. These four criteria, once again, are: 1, statement of purpose; 2, defined leadership roles; 3, a covenant of how members get along; and 4, an intention to make a difference beyond the group itself.
The Chinese character for the verb to listen is actually composed of several parts. There's the character for the ear, another representing the eyes, another the heart, and another for undivided attention. All these individual characters comprise that single verb, which means to listen. That's what small groups are about, a deeper kind of listening. Why is this so crucial in our high-speed age of surfing faster in the shallow? When was the last time that you genuinely listened to someone who matters to you? Did they listen to you in return? Did you feel that you were truly heard? My wife, who was a publisher and had about 30 employees, for Boss's Day, they gave her a picture, which is hanging in my study. It's a picture of zebra's ears, just the ears of the zebras. And they gave it to her because they told her, "You are a great listener." May all of us get a gift like that sometime. Why is it so critical to listen in our high-speed age of surfing? What's the desired outcome of a healthy network of small groups? It may not appear on objective measures such as membership or budget numbers. I would call it getting real, becoming more real than role. "Rabbit," sometimes said the skin horse, for he was always truthful. But what is real? Asked the rabbit. "Real isn't how you are made," said the skin horse. "It's a thing that happens to you." "Does it hurt?" asked the rabbit. "Sometimes," said the skin horse, for he was always truthful. "When you are real, you don't mind being hurt." "Does it happen all at once?" said the rabbit. "It doesn't happen all at once. You become. It takes a long time. That's why it doesn't often happen to people who break easily, or who have sharp edges, or have to be carefully kept. Generally, by the time you are real, most of your hair has been loved off, and you get loose in the joints and very shabby. But these things don't really matter at all, because once you are real, you can't be ugly, except to people who don't understand." Robert Bly writes, When men and women venture into life together, how much do they have to abandon? Wrens make their nests of fancy threads and string ends. Animals abandon all their money each year. What is it that men and women leave? They have to abandon their longing to be perfect. The inner nest, not made by instinct, will never be quite round. And each has to enter the nest made by the other imperfect bird. Each has to enter the nest made by the other imperfect bird. This, my friend, is our mission. It is, quote, "to address the isolation and rootlessness of modern life. It is to minister to the hurts and hopes of our community. It is to redefine our community beyond our membership borders, seeking to bring other people who need our support into our fellowship and into our lives. And it is to nurture deepening relationships between one another as they share their lives and their faith together."